It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees. It's been 39 degrees all day long. It's breezy as well, northwest winds to 21 miles per hour, gusting to 32 at the airport, where they still have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day, mostly sunny skies for tomorrow. But very breezy. Coming up on the Midday Report, for its first time in its history, the Alaska Board of Fisheries dedicated part of its meeting to traditional knowledge. A subsistence proposal out for salmon outside the mouths of danger in cold creeks on the Fognak Island was approved by the Board of Fisheries. And the start of the session for the legislature includes familiar arguments about funding things like education. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Three Republican candidates remain after Iowa's caucuses on Monday. Former President Donald Trump won that contest, and he's leading in the polls ahead of the New Hampshire primary next week. But that contest is closer as Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley fight for votes. NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben has more.
Well, their messages haven't really changed since Iowa, except I guess you could say there is a bit more attacking between the candidates, especially between Haley and Trump. Last night at a rally, Trump made it very clear he's focusing on taking aim at Haley, both personally and at some of her policies. Haley had an event last night where she also stuck to her usual script. She is set to give Trump more of a challenge here, so she's really focusing on hitting him. Here in New Hampshire, she's kind of trying to treat this as if it were a two-person race.
NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reporting. And Trump went after Haley personally, referring to her by her first name, Namrata, on his social media site. She's the daughter of Indian immigrants, and Nikki is her middle name. She was born in South Carolina and is a U.S. citizen. Meanwhile, a judge in Maine has delayed a decision on removing Trump from the ballot in that state until the U.S. Supreme Court rules on a similar case in Colorado. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reiterated the need for a pathway to a Palestinian state today, saying Israel otherwise wouldn't get genuine security.
There's a profound opportunity for regionalization in the Middle East, in the greater Middle East, that we have not had before. The challenge is realizing it.
Speaking there to the New York Times on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in the Swiss resort of Davos, he says if Israel comes to the fold of the Middle East, the region could isolate Iran and its proxies, which include Yemen's Houthi rebels, which have been attacking commercial ships in the Red Sea. He called Iran the biggest security concern. Apple has made changes to how it charges phone users for apps and other services. As NPR's Bobby Allen reports, it follows the Supreme Court declining to hear an appeal of a lawsuit centered on the company's multi-billion-dollar app store.
Apple and the maker of the video game Fortnite, Epic Games, have been locked in a years-long legal battle over how Apple charges customers for apps. After a trial in which the judge mostly sided with Apple, both sides appealed. And now the Supreme Court is refusing to review the case. A central issue in the fight has been over Epic's allegation that Apple has a monopoly over how payments are processed and charges customers up to 30% of each transaction. Since the High Court refused to step in, Apple released a statement saying it will now let app developers process payments at a lower fee. If developers choose to do this, Apple says it will take a 27% cut instead of 30. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street, the Dow's down 94, NASDAQ down 88. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. An important spawning area for salmon outside the mouths of Danger and Cold Creeks on Afognak Island will be closed to subsistence fishing. The Board of Fisheries announced its decision to put up subsistence markers at the head of Danger Bay during their meeting in Kodiak last week. Proposal 58, brought forward by longtime Kodiak fisherman Andy Christofferson, was the only subsistence-related proposal on the board's agenda. Christofferson said the aim is to protect the coho salmon population for all fishers, sport, and subsistence.
And the concern is if we don't put up subsistence markers, a person or persons are able to fish up to the mouth of a stream and eventually wipe out a coho run that will be non-existent for future user groups.
Initially, the native village of Uzinki opposed the closure based on how it would negatively impact subsistence users in the village, but later rescinded its opposition. The Kodiak Advisory Committee voted 12-1 in favor of Proposal 58, saying the closure would allow more fish to successfully spawn, and having subsistence markers would still leave ample opportunity for harvest in Danger Bay. Board of Fisheries members tended to agree, but in order to make it easier for wildlife enforcement and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the board amended the proposal to include two specific points of latitude and longitude as boundaries. Here is board member Marit Carlson Van Dort.
And so I spent some time, you know, talking to the regulation specialist last night and department staff about the easiest way to do that. There's a couple of species that go up here. It's pink salmon and coho. So this removes all subsistence gear in that very small section.
All subsistence fishing, which mainly involves gill nets or seines, will be prohibited within the northeast arm of Kazakoff Bay, also known as Danger Bay. However, sport fishing, which mainly involves rod and reel, will be allowed in that same area. For the first time in Alaska Board of Fisheries history, a portion of the finfish meeting in Kodiak last week was dedicated to traditional knowledge. As KMXT's Davis Hovey reports, the discussion covered a variety of topics, including equitable fishing for rural Kodiak Island residents.
Four people testified during the first-ever traditional knowledge report at Kodiak's Board of Fisheries' recent meeting. The group helps manage and regulate the state's fisheries. Natasha Hayden is the vice president of the Kodiak Island Tribal Coalition. She told the board that the coalition, on behalf of thousands of Lutik and Sukpiak people, has been advocating for more equal allocation of fishing for village residents and small boats.
We have regularly attended Board of Fish meetings for decades, providing expert testimony based on generations of experience in fisheries. Despite our engagement, we have been unsuccessful in making any positive impact for our people, and communities engaged fisheries management with a loss of access through privatization, declining fish populations, and rapidly changing environment.
Hayden then spoke for herself as a local resident of Kodiak Island, whose family has been fishing in the region for generations. She said she and others want to ensure that the sustainable fishing that has existed on this island for thousands of years continues for thousands more.
Prior to the contact by the Russians coming here to extract fur, there was 20,000 people on Kodiak Island in the archipelago. Right now, Kodiak Archipelago supports 13,000. And so fully self-contained, this rock in the North Pacific can support everybody.
Hayden says she has never submitted a proposal to the board because she doesn't fish commercially and continues to fish year-round to feed her family as her ancestors have done for generations. But with traditional knowledge formally incorporated into the Board of Fisheries going forward, Hayden hopes she can add more context and assist fishery managers. Two of the other traditional knowledge speakers were a father and son from Kodiak. 52-year-old James Alpiak Sr. described his experience purse seining in Uyak Bay and how that has changed over the last 40-plus years.
The only difference back then was there was more seiners between Larsen Bay and Whitney Fidalgo. It wasn't until about the 80s our traditional seining spots were slowly getting picked away by gillnets. And by the 90s, all our traditional seining spots inside UYAC were pretty much gone.
Alpaiak's son, James Jr., echoed his father's observations, highlighting the growing conflict between set gillnetters and seiners on Kodiak Island that dominated public discussion at the meeting. Several proposals before the Board of Fisheries last week focused on the relationship between gillnetters and seiners, especially gear restrictions. Before concluding the traditional knowledge portion of the FinFish meeting in Kodiak, all four speakers thanked BOF managers for the opportunity to contribute and hoped their voices would add perspective. The board chair thanked all of the participants and asked Hayden directly if she was advocating for a complete shift in how the Board of Fish operates, to which she replied,
"The human-fish relationship needs to be included, is what I'm saying. That fisheries management is not managing the fish. Fisheries management is managing the people, and that us as people, we have to have a broader view of how that's done."
The next time a traditional knowledge report will be included in a Board of Fisheries meeting will be in Anchorage to discuss Upper Cook Inlet finfish proposals starting in late February. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Debates over education funding dominated as lawmakers gathered in Juneau Tuesday for the start of this year's legislative session. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak, says a boost to the base per student funding, known as the Base Student Allocation, or BSA, is the top priority for his caucus.
We took the lead on funding education and certainly support a BSA increase. But right at this point, we're awaiting here from the House what their plans are.
Last year, the Senate passed a bill that would have boosted base per student public school funding by $1,000. After negotiations with the House, the legislature settled on a one-year funding increase equivalent to roughly $680, and that was ultimately cut in half by a veto by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Stevens says many members of his caucus would support overriding that veto. House Minority Leader Calvin Schragi, an Anchorage independent, called upon his colleagues to do so.
And I think what we've heard from many loud and clear is that education is in crisis in Alaska.
While the budget that included a $680 increase passed 26-14 amid fears of a government shutdown, Tuesday's vote to set up a veto override failed 20-20. Three rural Democrats and independents in the Republican-led majority caucus split with their colleagues to vote in favor. Lawmakers have 5 days to override the veto, and Schragi says he plans to try again soon. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, says her caucus doesn't believe it should focus on a one-time funding boost.
We are looking at a solution to put forward for public education in the full umbrella of what that looks like and not just laser-focused on a one-time increase.
Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican who chairs the House Rules Committee, says he plans to advance a bill that would provide a $300 boost to base per student funding. Johnson says he also anticipates adding other education priorities into the bill.
We're going to take a whack at the apple on some of the things that we want to see in terms of accountability, some things we want to see in terms of correspondence schools, transportation. There is also the teacher retention bonuses that the governor has introduced will also be in this bill, which is a direct pay to teachers. So those are some of the things, but it is subject to change.
Schragi, the minority leader, says the $300 increase falls short of the $380 in one-time funding ultimately approved last year.
If the proposal as outlined today were to pass, it would be a cut to education.
And leaders in the Senate say they support a larger increase. Bethel Democratic Senator Lyman Hoffman says he expects the Senate's budget to include a significantly higher per-student funding boost.
In my experience, whatever level that we funded in the operating budget on a short-term basis becomes the minimum number. And that number this last year was $680.
The House Rules Committee is scheduled to take invited testimony on the school funding bill, Senate Bill 140, at 4 p.m. Wednesday. Johnson says he plans to take public testimony and a committee vote on the bill in coming days. Avalanche activity is high in Juneau after more than 30 inches of snow fell over the weekend. A Monday evening avalanche blocked Thane Road, and a Tuesday morning avalanche dusted homes in the Barrens neighborhood. No damage has been reported, though. Emily Osborne was in her house on Glacier Highway when the Barrens slide came down.
I think it was more dramatic since it was so sunny and a bluebird day outside. And all of a sudden, the lighting in my living room just kind of changed. It all of a sudden went from like bright sunshine to like more of like a dark golden color. And I looked out the window and all I could see was just snow.
Osborne has lived in the house since 2019, but she said this was the first time she's witnessed an avalanche coming down.
But it probably lasted for about 30 seconds, and it was just like a blizzard outside.
The storm gave way to clear skies and cold temperatures that are expected to persist until the weekend. Juneau's emergency programs manager, Tom Matisse, said it will take a few days for the weekend snow to bond with the existing snowpack. In the meantime, strong winds over the ridges could trigger more avalanches.
The area that slid on Barrens this morning was a very small piece of much bigger avalanche path. So there's still danger up there, but I don't believe the depth is as set that it could hit houses.
Juneau's urban avalanche advisory was set on high as of Tuesday morning. The extreme level is typically reserved for scenarios that could damage houses. But Matisse said avalanche country should be avoided, especially in the Flume Creek and the entirety of the Gold Creek Basin and Perseverance Basin areas. Meanwhile, Thane Road has reopened after two avalanches blocked it on Monday night, but the Alaska Department of Transportation says people should not stop in the slide zone on their way through. Alaska's only state-run psychiatric hospital plans to launch two new programs for people without the mental capacity to stand trial. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has the story.
Alaska Psychiatric Institute's, or API's, initiative would expand a 10-bed inpatient program to also serve outpatients and people in jail. The program aims to help people found not competent for trial better manage their condition and educate them about the legal process. The main goal is to help people become mentally competent enough to stand trial. Dr. Christy Becker, an API psychologist, is the program lead.
We use medication for individuals who have psychosis to help ameliorate their worst symptoms that interfere with their ability to understand what's happening to them. And then for individuals who have cognitive deficits or intellectual disabilities, we do a lot of teaching. This is what your attorney's job is. This is what a judge does. This is how a plea bargain works. Concepts like that.
The plan would expand API's program capacity to 30. Becker says Alaska has lagged behind other states in providing restoration services. API's 10 beds are the only program in the state.
That is the lowest per capita bed count for competency restoration in any state in the nation.
The few spaces in API's program means a wait list. Becker says it's usually around 40 people, and people on the list may have to wait for up to 5 months. Becker says the new programs would help cut the wait list without adding physical beds to the facility. One program is for up to 10 people who are in jail. They'll work with clinicians from API while they remain incarcerated. The second is for nonviolent offenders who've been released on bail. That will be an outpatient program in Anchorage for up to 10 people. Even with the pilot programs, Alaska will still have the fewest inpatient beds per capita for this type of program. But Becker says it would move Alaska closer to average for how many people are served by all branches of the program. And she says it will likely save the state money because inpatient treatment is so costly. The new programs could allow nonviolent offenders to avoid inpatient treatment, letting them stay in their community connected to existing support. The criminal justice system sometimes catches people who may need mental health care but aren't getting it. Becker says accessing care, even if it's through the criminal justice system, can be transformative.
mentally ill individuals, based on data, based on research, are not more likely to be violent than other individuals. And I think that's a misnomer that sometimes comes of this, because often the only time these sorts of cases find their way into the news is when something has gone wrong. Many of these folks do tend to do well. Many of them do only come through the process one time.
API plans to start the programs this month. Becker says the goal is reduced wait times and reduced recidivism. If successful, they hope to continue and expand the programs. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Dillingham police say the man accused of firing a shotgun at a local hospital on Sunday had also allegedly set fire to his girlfriend's bedroom that same morning. Daniel Cody Lewis has been charged with attempted murder after allegedly firing multiple rounds at Dillingham's hospital, according to court documents. Lewis is also charged with one count of arson and multiple counts of assault. The charges are labeled as domestic violence related. The court documents say officers received word of fire in the residence Lewis shared with his girlfriend in Dillingham Sunday morning. Officers arrived at the residence and found a fire lit inside his girlfriend's bedroom. Shots had been fired inside the residence as well, according to a witness's statement included in the court documents. Later, the charges say that Lewis confronted his girlfriend in the hospital parking lot. She told police he physically assaulted her, and then she went inside the hospital, after which he began to fire shots. A security officer at the scene told police that Lewis fired at the security booth where the officer was seated, and at another booth near the entrance to the hospital's emergency room, and at the emergency room's glass door. Later, the security officer said Lewis fired into the hospital building from a large window outside of the hospital. The charges say Lewis then allegedly went to the hospital's ambulance bay and fired more shots. Dillingham's acting chief of police, Craig Maines, said in a call to KDLG that the police received a call about the shooter about 6 in the morning. He said the suspect fled the hospital on a four-wheeler prior to the officer's arrival and was followed by Dillingham police until they arrested him downtown.
Americans delivered a strong end to the holiday shopping season. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Consumers kept spending in December, even as polls suggest that they're worried about the economy. The Commerce Department says retail sales rose nearly 5% compared to a year earlier. Spending at bars and restaurants rose a whopping 11%. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing new regulation to cut bank overdraft fees to as little as $3. Currently, those fees average around $27, according to Bankrate. If the proposal survives challenges, it would take effect in late 2025. A federal judge has blocked JetBlue's effort to purchase Spirit Airlines. The judge said the deal would do away with the budget carrier that's helping keep domestic fares low. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 17th day of January, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 9:39. It will set again at 5 p.m. That will give us 7 hours and 22 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 26 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 47 degrees set in 1929, and our record low was 5 degrees set in Chile, 1972. Currently 41 degrees, fair and breezy. Northwest winds at 21 steadily at the airport. They are also gusting to 35. They have 10 miles of visibility there. And the Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly sunny skies tomorrow with mostly clear skies overnight. North winds 2:30, gusting to 45 today, and 20 to 25 tonight, gusting to 35. Tomorrow, northeast winds 15 to 20, gusting to 30. We are almost at low tide here on the east side. That will happen at 12:34 this afternoon, 10 minutes or so. That will be a 1.5-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:30 p.m. of 6.6 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:11 p.m. and be 2.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:03 p.m. of 11.1 feet. Mariners, be aware, we have a gale warning through Thursday, from Marbot Island to Sitkanek, out to 15 nautical miles, north winds to 30 knots, increasing to 45 knots this afternoon, seas to 10 feet, building to 12 feet tonight. For tomorrow, northeast winds to 35 knots and seas to 11 feet. For Thursday night, northeast 35, seas to 12 feet. And for Friday and Saturday, northeast 30 with 12-foot seas on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through Thursday there as well. Northeast 30 becoming north 40 this afternoon. 6-foot seas building to 11 feet this afternoon. For tonight, north 45, seas to 15 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, northeast winds to 35 knots, seas to 12 feet. For Thursday night and Friday, they're calling for northeast 30, 8-foot seas coming down to 6 feet on Friday. And for Saturday, northeast 25, seas to 6 feet in the Shelikof. Well, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 tonight. The following are upcoming meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough. On Monday, January 22nd, the Architectural and Engineering Review Board will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. On Tuesday, January 23rd, the Solid Waste Contract Committee will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 1 p.m. On Tuesday, January 23rd, the Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board will be having its regular meeting at the Bayside Fire Hall at 6 p.m. On Thursday, January 25th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public. For more information, contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310. And at tomorrow's Assembly meeting, they will be proclaiming U.S. Coast Guard We Applaud You Day. They will also be amending the revenue and finance rules to increase the manager's authority potentially from $25,000 to $50,000 spending. That already happened. Coming up on Galley Tables on February 2nd, the truth is out there. So be waiting for that. Galley Tables is coming up. Also, The Outsiders, the KMS Drama Club, is presenting The Outsiders, adapted by Christopher Sergel from the book by S.E. Hinton. And that's happening in the Drama Pod, February 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m. Only $3 for students and seniors and $5 for adults. Again, that's The Outsiders. That's going on February 2nd and 3rd, 7 p.m. in the Drama Pod. And the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is calling all Kodiak's agricultural enthusiasts, including chicken farmers, ranchers, growers, and gardeners. There will be a talk about the challenges of agriculture in Kodiak and the solutions people have developed at the Kodiak Public Library. That's happening Thursday, February 1st, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. They will also discuss the potential for future workshops that might be helpful, and they will include brief introductions to programs available to assist agriculture producers in Kodiak. Again, that's happening at the Kodiak Public Library Thursday, February 1st, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m., and they say please feel free to join whenever you can. For more information, give them a call on the phone at 907-486-5574. Or email them at Ian Zacher, that's IAN.ZACHER, at KodiakSoilAndWater.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.